Chapter 31.
Good kill, Shah, exclaimed Ted.
Ned pointed a talon down at the twitching body.
I don't suppose you're going to eat that.
Knight Commander Tyron Urthos ignored the zombie and ghoul as he stepped over the prone man. The rest of the civilians fled from him, and dark magics compelled him to pursue.
He's not going to even dignify that with a response, Ned, said Ted. Our Knight Commander is focused on the mission at hand, as we should all be. Which is odd, given his recent hesitance to take part in the siege, Ned said, shuffling along to join the pack of walking dead. A momentary lapse, said the zombie. Clearly, the Knight Commander has been nothing if not motivated of late.
Quiet as well, said the ghoul.
In the confines of his own mind, Tyron screamed a litany of curses at the pair of idiots. The civilians ahead had stopped, cornered by another squadron of the undead. Tyron pressed in. He felt his blade raised for the kill. His eyes fell upon his victim, a tiny gnollish woman holding a young pup. His arm was at its zenith when a human girl pushed the gnoll away and stepped in the path of the blade, staring up at the Knight Commander with bravery and defiance on her face. Her face. From the haunted corners of his memory, Tyron saw the same rebellion in the brown eyes of a toddler claiming she'd not go to bed for the night. He heard her laugh as she bounced on his knee, helped her wipe away tears as he cleaned the scrape on her elbow, marveled at the radiance of her smile as she bit into her first tea cake, held her close as they watched fireflies dance in the garden at Vetchel. Her cheeks were thinner now, her features those of a woman rather than a babe, but there was no mistaking his daughter's face. Somewhere beyond consciousness, something snapped. Power surged through Tyron, flooding into him from unknown depths and melting away bonds and barriers alike. It broke from his throat in a singular, anguished scream.
Stop!
He roared in a voice like that of death itself. To his surprise, he did. His blade halted inches from little Aubie's face. The other undead froze as well, locked in place. Black scorch marks spread from beneath the Knight Commander's feet, creeping over the pavers and up the walls like a rapid mold. For a long moment, father and daughter stared at each other from opposite sides of Tyron's unholy sword.
Aubie,
Tyron managed to croak. Wherever his newfound strength came from, it wasn't sufficient to give him complete control of his own body. He was caught between his own will and that of the crown of iron thorns, unwilling to strike and unable to sheathe his blade.
How do you know my name?
The girl's face was a mask of horror.
What are you?
Tyron couldn't answer.
Perhaps I can help, miss,
said Ted, prompting alarmed stares from the assembled civilians.
The Knight Commander's exact nature has been a matter of some debate among us, you see. But with his newfound ability to control the rest of us, the black flames he's throwing off, and the new glow in his eyes, not to mention the foul magic oozing from his armor, added Ned.
I tried not to mention that, yes, said Ted, embarrassing. Regardless, I think it's safe to say now that Knight Commander Urthos is a Death Knight.
Urthos, breathed Aubie. Tyron saw recognition and pain in her eyes, and it felt like a stab in the heart he didn't have anymore.
We probably should have known as much, said Ted. All the classic signs of a Death Knight origination story are there. He had all those family issues a few years back when Lady Urthos left him for that bard. Certainly some unresolved grievances there,
agreed Ned.
And then the public fall from grace when he was demoted to head of the guardhouse.
Right, and again when he was put in charge of Vetchel's defense,
said Ted.
Which brings us to the dereliction of duty leading to an untimely death. Oh, that's a key bit, said Ned.
You're my father,
breathed Aubie, looking into the flaming sockets where Tyron's eyes used to be. Slowly, laboriously, the Knight Commander nodded.
Another important detail, said Ted.
And now you're saving us?
Asked Aubie.
Well, let's not be hasty, said Ned. The Knight Commander's sudden burst of willpower might delay the inevitable, but the curse of undeath still drives us all to eat you.
I don't want to eat anyone,
offered Rudge from somewhere in the back.
Nobody cares, Rudge, snapped the ghoul.
I know,
said Rudge.
No,
said the Knoll.
I like where the skeleton is going with this.
What we want is beside the point, really, said Ted. It's only a matter of time before the Lich re-exerts his will, and then Commander Urthos won't have any more choice in the matter than the rest of us. We'll be compelled to kill you all. But we won't be allowed to eat anyone, if that's a consolation,
Ned sighed.
So nobody wins, really.
Well, some of us lose by a much bigger margin, snapped the Knoll.
Tyron could already feel his grip slipping. The blade inched closer to Obby.
Still, it's impressive that our knight commander has held out against a lich's will this long, said Ted.
Perhaps the master is distracted, suggested Ned.
I just can't concentrate when you slouch like that. Dhatarr paused his weaving, wisps of shadow flame and noctomancy still suspended around his fingers and staff. You know how bothersome I find it. Jin Ermion could barely lift his head to look at the lich. His vision was blurring, and he clutched his side with his gloved hand to staunch the flow of blood.
What?
It makes you look like a feeble street urchin, the lich said. Stand up straight. Jin stared at the specks of light where his father's eyes had once been, drawing deep and ragged breaths. I'm dying, and you want me to think about my posture, he said levelly. Dhatarr nodded. It's a major milestone in your existence. I can't even die well enough for you. The Omnomancer shook his head. Memories sloshed around in his mind, recollections of his father telling him to stand up in classes, at events, during dinner, at mother's funeral. An echoing chorus of a father reminding a son how stupid, how foolish, how weak, how poor he looked whenever he didn't sit the right way. A thousand voices chorusing about his posture, fusing into a single line that ran through the chaos in his mind. And at the end of it, a feeling that had always been there, locked away. You could if you stood up straight. There, like that, yes, said Dhatarr. Appearances matter at times like this. You are literally in the process of killing me, and you're giving me a lecture on my bearing. Jin's voice was as flat and even as a frozen lake. The emotions went farther down than the memories, to depths he didn't know he had, reserves he never knew existed. I'm not lecturing you. I'm just saying that I stood up straight when I died, said Dhatarr. You could have asked Johann if you hadn't helped him escape. In that moment, however, Jin didn't really hear his father. How? He said, channeling water through his gloved hand. The wounds on his side closed as he straightened up. How can this be the most important thing right now? How has it ever been the most important thing? Dhatarr rolled the pinpoints of light in his eye sockets. Look, I only said that appearances matter. No, they don't! Jin was shouting, solomancy and noctomancy wreathing his hands. If you cared how we look, you wouldn't be trying to raise the biggest city on Arth right now. This isn't about how you look. This is about you holding me back. The lich's lower jaw swiveled down, his skull agape. How dare you, he hissed, weaving his dark spell once more. A blast of black tentacles burst from Dhatarr's skeletal fingers, reaching toward Jin. After all I've done for you.
Done for me? Snapped Jin. He attempted to catch the spell in a web of omnomancy, but his father's weaves were stronger than anything the wizard could manage, and he was forced to dodge away from the blast. He grunted in pain as the spell raked across his back. You pushed me beyond my limits, and then punished me for failure. You locked me away from the world, and then degraded me for not having social skills. You ridiculed me as weak, when it was you keeping me from my true power. Your true power? Omnomancy? Yes, I kept you from shaming yourself out of a career.
The violet flames around Dhatarr's skull grew into a towering inferno roiling over his black crown.
Gods, I make one remark on your stature and you lose your mind, boy. It wasn't one comment, it's everything you've ever said. It's all part of a larger pattern. Jin's screams dropped to an awed whisper as he saw the truth of his own words. It's part of a larger pattern, he said again, glancing down. The interlocking grooves etched into the stone beneath his feet didn't just have a few Noctomancer's runes. Every line was part of runes drawn into the strata of stone and earth. The spaces between the great sigils of Noctomancy were runes of Solomancy. When arranged together in interlocking tessellation, they formed a third type of rune that Jin had only encountered in the libraries of the Fane Amada, runes of the Twilight Order. The Dark Spire of Nephin was an Omnomancer's artifact. Oh, and I suppose I'm the bad guy in all of this, said the Lich. Yes! How is that even a question? Jin twisted threads of light and shadow around himself. There wouldn't be a second chance. You could have supported me. You could have helped me instead of punishing me. Mother never cared that I was an Omnomancer, but once she was gone, you kept me from weaving Solomancy. You knew that was all I had of her. You leave your mother out of this. You... The Tar shook his head and leveled the wormwood staff at Jin. You never appreciated what I gave you. You'll understand soon enough. There was a noise like a bumblebee shattering the sound barrier, and then the crystal on the end of the staff flared with pale green light. A shockwave rippled through the air, and behind it a wave of emerald sorcery rolled from the tip of the staff. The noxious plasma flowed toward Jin like an elemental battering ram, ponderous and unstoppable. The Omnomancer feigned as though he would raise a ward, but at the last moment he slammed his weave into the runes of the Dark Spire of Nephin. Scintillating colors ran over the stones, running through ancient runes like water through canals. Light and shadow flickered as the air above the runes began to distort the view of the burning city around them. Jin could feel the matrix of Omnomancy rising up, could sense it responding to the weaves. He twisted his fingers, tugging at the web as a puppeteer might maneuver a marionette. The threads of Noctomancy and Solomancy tugged and pushed on each other, pulling and repelling and reshaping magic in their proximity. Datar's oncoming spell was refracted through the fractal lenses of Omnomancy. Threads of noxious energy flowed in every direction, spilling through the Dark Spire's magical field like water through a sieve, before bending back around themselves. And what exactly is that supposed to be doing? Snarled Datar. Jin wasn't entirely sure there was a term for it, but his hands moved with a certainty brought by years of spellcasting. Deftly twisting his fingers, he conjured weaves and helix patterns to adjust the polarity of the magical network. With some simple adjustments, he rewove the Lich's spell into something new, a crude lance of lightning that the Omnomancer fired back at his father. Datar raised a ward of shadow that easily deflected the bolt. Was that supposed to impress me? He snarled. No, said Jin. It's not all about you. He extended his hand and held it open expectantly. What do you... Gah! Datar shrieked as the wormwood staff lurched from his grasp and floated across the gulf toward his son. No! For once, stop flailing about in ignorance and listen to me. You still don't comprehend what you're tampering with, you fool. Why must you always meddle and never think things through? That's not who I am, said Jin, reaching out. The staff landed lightly in his palm, pulsing with unexpected warmth as he gripped it. A tingling sensation washed over him, and as it did so, his magically attuned robes shifted again. Layered silks and fine embroidery sprouted among the ratty folds of his Omnomancer's robes. Tattered edges mended and grew emerald buttons. A long white mantle grew from the shoulders, cascading down over the intricate patterns surging through the fabrics. Power and light wreathed Jin as his robes acknowledged what no wizard could deny. With the wormwood staff in hand, Jin was an archmage of the Order of Twilight. The Lich stopped to study his son's new attire. Perhaps, he said, you may have come farther than I expected of you, but let's be honest, that's not difficult.
He punctuated the declaration with a burst of dark magic as wings of shadow and malice erupted from his back. The lich's foul sorcery crashed onto the dark spire of Nephin, overwhelming and collapsing the magical matrix as the dark spell rushed toward the Omnomancer. Jin studied the incoming spell without concern. With the power of the Wormwood Staff thrumming through his veins, the tide of sorcery seemed to drift lazily toward him, like leaves on a breeze. Basic, he said, erecting a shield. His polarized ward absorbed Datar's spell and sent it back at the lich in a ball of lightning. The lich dodged and fired off another volley. Father and son darted and ran, wove spells and erected wards, spiraling around each other in deadly sport. Jin loosed a particularly powerful bolt of fire and lightning when something passed within inches of his face, forcing him to duck. He got a protective spell up just as the Banshee's wail washed over him. The world went wobbly as the ear-splitting keen rattled Jin's head. A moment later, a violet comet slammed into his back, sending him sprawling. "I tried to make this easy for you," said Datar, floating a little closer to his son. "I would have raised you as something nice, something powerful. We could have ruled Arth together as father and son." Jin pushed himself to his knees and took a deep breath. Gripping the Wormwood Staff in both hands, he drew fully from its power. Thick cords of light and shadow whipped around him, vaporizing the Banshee and several other specters. Electricity buzzed in his teeth. A great wind rushed up from the ground beneath him, blowing away the smoke and ash in the air. The black leather glove he wore on his left hand burned away. "I never wanted that." Jin stood, or rather rose to a more vertical position, carried by the wind and magic that wreathed him. "I never wanted any of that." "Nobody wanted it," snarled the lich. "Nobody said this was ideal. But if we want to continue on, sacrifices must be made for power. You know it's true." "I wouldn't make the sacrifices you have," Jin said. "Necromancy? Demonology? I'd never stoop to the evils you have, Father. I'm nothing like you." "Oh, and what have you done to yourself there?" The lich pointed at Jin's left hand, or rather, what was left of it. Jin glanced down at the appendage. Using solomancy after decades of attunement to noctomancy had stripped the flesh from his frame. The bones of his forearm protruded from a blackened stump, and they ended in a skeletal hand animated by Jin's noctomancy alone. The Omnomancer flexed his dead fingers, sending threads of fire dancing around the staff they gripped. "I guess I am like you in some ways," he said, pointing the staff at his father. "Just not the ones that matter." A white beam of fire and lightning erupted from the tip of the staff. Datar erected a quick ward, but Jin's spell punched through it as though it had never existed. The lich's right arm disintegrated the instant the spell touched it. Half of his pelvis and one of his legs were sheared off as he tried to jerk away from the fiery light. The ray of brilliant energy continued through the second tier, punching through walls and carving holes in rooftops, until it eventually seared into the Laboratory of Creative Destruction Incorporated, where it completely vaporized an unfortunate viscous rhombohedron. Datar stumbled back and lifted into the air. What remained of his skeletal body was racked with spasms as wisps of scintillating light strobed across his dark robes. The black crown on his head was hanging askew, and he gripped it with his remaining hand as he rose. "To me!" he cried. Spectral figures swirled around the stricken lich. Skeletal and rotting soldiers clambered up the ruined gatehouse. Jin incinerated the nearest zombies with a simple weave, but more were already flanking him, and Datar was floating away toward the outer gates. A wall of corpses and spirits pressed in toward the Omnomancer, obscuring his father. "This isn't over, Father!" Jin hollered at the retreating lich, though he wasn't entirely sure that was the case. The Wormwood Staff's energies were reaching their limit, and the Omnomancer was as close to running out of magic as his father seemed to be. Yet Datar didn't have a swarm of enemies bearing down on him. The lead specter in the mob of spirits broke away and swooped at the wizard, arms outstretched. Its face contorted into a leering scream, and then contorted farther still as a silver arrow bored through its translucent body.
By the time the ghostly fighter had evaporated, a cloud of green smoke had enveloped the zombies and skeletons behind it. Jin grinned. It took you long enough, he said to Katha, as she leapt spryly to the top of Fafnir's gate.
Hey, blame the weapons master, said Katha, loosing another arrow. He's the one who got mortally wounded.
Is he well enough to fight? Jin watched Heraldin and Geist whirl amidst the emerald clouds, lopping heads and limbs off the confused undead within. The weapons master still clutched his side with his off hand.
Laruna healed him, shouted Heraldin.
So, should he be fighting? Jin asked.
He was actually worse before she did, Katha added. That's progress.
A storm of flames surged up from the opposite side of the ruined gatehouse, sending charred corpses flying out over the second tier. A moment later, Laruna climbed into view.
Would you just get going?
With a nod to the Solomancer, Jin ran to the edge of the dark spire. It was a long drop down to the base below, but Datara was floating level with the top of the second tier's walls. The one-legged lich wriggled through the smoke and ash like a leech swimming through a murky pond.
I wasn't at my full power.
Datara tried to look back at his son, but his awkward flight sent his head twisting and bobbing in odd directions.
If I hadn't been fighting all night, your little tricks wouldn't have been enough to save you.
Jin raised the wormwood staff. I'm sorry, father. I really am.
I don't need your pity, shrieked the lich. Stop laughing at me!
The Omnomancer's brow furrowed. I'm not laughing, he said. Datara cocked his head.
Well, someone is.
The wall of the closest building erupted in a cloud of splinters and bricks as a mad ball of fury burst through it. Most of Datar Ermion's physical form exploded in similar fashion as Gorm Ingerson slammed into his side, and what was left of it was dragged away by the trajectory of the airborne dwarf. The lich's ribcage crunched as Gorm landed atop it. A second later, the crown of iron thorns bounced off the dirt next to him. Heraldin shook his head in admiration.
He really does know how to make an entrance.
And an exit as well, I suppose.
Katha watched Gorm's retreating figure. A fading cackle followed the dwarf as he rampaged onward to parts unknown. Jin ignored the fate of his father's body. The important part was Datar's head, still hovering in the air with stubborn purple flames flickering around it. With the majority of the lich's skeleton gone, a glittering crystal was clearly visible at the base of the floating skull. Thin tendrils of necromancy wove outward from it like searching tentacles. The floating skull noticed his son's attentions.
Jin. No, you don't understand, it gasped.
I doubt I ever will, said Jin, already weaving. The air shimmered briefly as the Omnomancer extended his right hand. Strands of air flowed from him as he reached out to the bottom of Datar's skull. His skeletal digits wound threads of fire and light around the wind, pushing aside the last wards protecting the lich. Closing his fist, Jin pulled a long violet crystal from his father's head.
No,
moaned Datar Ermion, and then his voice died with the flames surrounding his head. The inert skull hung in the air for a moment, the lights in its sockets flickering out. Then it dropped to the earth below and shattered. The spell broke like melting snow. When Tyron first felt the lich's grip weaken, he could move his blade away from Abby. A short while later, he dropped his weapon to his side and managed to say her name again. Soon the power of the lich faded entirely, but Tyron remained staring at his daughter. Everything around her seemed to fall away.
You're in control, aren't you?
Said Abby, looking at his black and blasted armor.
Father?
Little Abby, said Tyron.
Aubryn, she corrected. I mean, nobody's called me Abby since you passed. Well, I thought you were dead.
Technically correct,
offered Ted. He backed away with a rueful shrug as Tyron's gaze fell upon him. The young woman was clearly trying to avoid looking directly at the zombie.
Right, but I meant, Mom and Chadwick said,
let's not talk about your mother and Chadwick. We don't have much time, said Tyron.
Without the influence of the crown of iron thorns, he could feel the undead all around. Hungry, fearful, furious, barely restrained.
But you're saving us, right?
Aubryn said.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes!
Tyron's last affirmation was made with extra force. Ned closed his mouth and slowly backed away from a panicked man in a cobbler's apron.
But I cannot stop the other undead for long, the Death Knight continued. I need to leave soon if you're to be safe. And I just want you to know that I know now I wasn't the father I should have been, the man I should have been. But I love you, Aubie, Aubryn. There wasn't much good in me, but you had the best of it, always.
Aubryn nodded.
Okay.
An awkward silence hung in the air between the skeletal knight and his teenage daughter.
Okay,
he said.
Just okay?
I'm sorry. It's just a lot to take in.
Aubryn gave an apologetic shrug.
I mean, I barely remember you. Up until a few minutes ago, I thought you drank yourself to death.
Also not entirely inaccurate,
suggested Ned, earning a withering glare from the Death Knight.
And now you're here, but, you know, you're a skeleton in evil-looking armor, and you're with a pack of zombies and a bear monster.
A bear monster? Tyron asked. Mr. Stern, if it pleases you.
The crowd parted to reveal the speaker, an undead ursine creature wearing a predatory grin and the tattered remains of a business suit.
Is nice to meet you.
This guy's great,
said the head of marketing, bobbing into view next to Mr. Stern.
He's got big ideas, Knight Commander. Big ideas.
Right, and the flying skull that's on fire,
said Aubryn, giving the head of marketing a sideways glance.
And then you show up and you save us and say you always loved me. This sort of thing takes time to, you know, process.
Right.
Tyron tried to take a deep breath with his missing lungs.
Right.
The assembled townsfolk and unliving abominations glanced around and cleared their throats nervously.
Well, we should probably, you know.
Tyron left the pause hanging in the air, watching Aubryn for any sign of interjecting.
Eat them all?
Suggested Ned.
Leave, growled the Death Knight. We should probably leave.
Sir, this is the largest city on the continent,
protested Ted.
You'll not find a better place to invade.
I don't want to invade anywhere. I don't want to kill anyone. I wish to let people make whatever they want of their lives.
Ned snorted derisively.
Well, that might work for you, sir, but the rest of us are under curses that...
We're all cursed, snapped the Death Knight. We all suffer. We all still must make our own decisions and let other people make theirs.
The ghoul scratched his chin thoughtfully.
But if I choose to not let other people make decisions, vis-a-vis eating them, how would...
You will come with me.
Tyron said it with an air of finality, but the speed and coordination with which the surrounding undead all stopped and mechanically turned to follow still surprised him.
There's that magically enforced social hierarchy again,
muttered Ted.
But where will we go?
Asked Ned. Tyron thought for a moment. His mind drifted back to summers spent by the freezing, stinking salt bogs, wandering a dusty fortress. Castle Urthos was leagues away from anyone, and his memories from the old family estate were mostly pleasant.
To my ancestral home, on the coastal marshes of the Ice Gale Sea.
I like it, said the head of marketing. Need some rebranding, but there's a lot to work with. How do you feel about the Dead Tundra, or the Frozen Wastes, Frostweep Castle, the Ice Mire of Death?
Tyron nodded absently, ignoring the proposed trademarks, and turned once more to his daughter.
Farewell, Aubryn Urthos. Remember me a little more fondly.
Nodding to her, he started to lead the pack of shambling undead down the road.
Father?
Tyron turned back to his daughter. She wore a conflicted wince.
Maybe I could write you a letter?
I'd like that,
said Tyron, his skeletal grin more sincere than ever before. Unable to hold back his surging paternal enthusiasm, he added,
You could even visit Castle Urthos.
Auburn wrung her crimson kerchief as she looked at the slavering, rotting dead surrounding them.
"Or write a letter."
"Yes, right, of course. A letter would be great."
With a final wave to his daughter, Tyron set off down the street. He could feel the walking dead gathering around him now, could sense them bending to his will as he made his way back toward the main gate. Skeletons and zombies broke away from confused defenders to hobble after him. Ghouls clambered from the shadows to fall in line with the marching throng. Genevieve and a few ghosts drifted down from the sky. In the distance, the gnomish organ began playing a sad song of retreat of its own accord. Genevieve flew up beside Tyron.
"Where are we going?"
she asked.
"To Castle Chilmorn on the Iceblood Coast," said the head of marketing.
"Why? What are we going to do there?"
asked Genevieve.
The flaming skull bobbed in a shoulderless shrug. "Beats me. We can figure that out once we have a good name."
"I have some thoughts on the matter," chimed in Mr. Stern. "What do you know about mortgage-backed securities?"
"I have always considered myself a bit of an expert on real estate," said Ted, straightening up a bit, "and finance, and everything else,"
grumbled Ned, rubbing his empty stomach.
"Say what you will, Ned, but I think us undead could make excellent investors."
The zombie tapped his rotting skull.
"No more emotions, see? Nothing but cold, rational logic."
"Oh yes, absolutely,"
said Rudge, eager to be part of the discussion.
"But do you really think we can open a bank?"
Genevieve asked Tyron.
"I mean, don't we need money?"
"Leave capitalization to Mr. Stern," said the zombified werebear.
His grin somehow looked more menacing than when he was trying to eat the townsfolk.
"Sure, we can do it," said the head of marketing. "I'll run marketing, of course, and Genevieve can handle customer service. Then the night commander can be chairman of the board." "Does he know much about the business?"
asked Ned. "Probably not, but we still have to do everything he says anyway," said the head of marketing.
"Sounds like chairman to me," said Mr. Stern.
Tyron paid the other's plans no mind. He strode quietly through the ruined streets of Andoran, drawing the undead to him as a lantern brings evening moths. A familiar skeletal torso emerged from a ruined building, and the armless, headless body bobbed along with enthusiasm, rattling the sign nailed to its sternum. The Night Commander considered the sign for a moment before delivering a couple of swift strokes with his sword. Wooden blocks bearing the words "Abandon" and "All" clattered on the cobblestones, leaving the shaken skeleton with the word "Hope" nailed to its chest.
"Hardly the time for playing with signs, what with us retreating," grumbled Ned. "The Night Commander's setting a tone, Ned," said Ted. "It's symbolic. It's indulgent and tacky, that's what it is," said the ghoul. "This isn't the time for wordplay." "Well, they say everybody's allowed just one," said the zombie.
Tyron remained silent. His eyes were to the east, where the rising sun marked his path back to Ruskin, but his thoughts were with the young woman on the second tier and the future that lay ahead of her.